A couple months ago, I was in Indonesia visiting some of the folk that are working there with our organization, and also met missionaries with other organizations. And one evening, we went out into this community evangelizing. And as we walked into this community, within 5 or 10 steps, there was somebody standing at their house, outside their house. And I, of course, don't speak Indonesian. We're talking through an interpreter. And he asked us who we were and invited us into his house. Well, a couple of missionaries that we were with had already made provisional appointments with some other people that we were going to visit. And so we said, well, if we have time, we'll stop by and see you. And so we went up to where they had made these contacts originally. And a couple of them went there, and a couple of them went to the other one. They said, well, why don't you go back to that guy and see if you could talk with him. And so we headed back down there, and he wasn't there, but across the street from him was a guy that was standing there. And he said, and so we asked him, do you know where he went to? He said, well, he had run into town quickly, but and he talked to us and said, well, why don't you come into my house? Now, these are Muslims in Indonesia, whom you would think would not be too friendly towards Americans, but we got welcomed right in. And within a few minutes, we were sitting down with a drink and banana fritters. And within probably 15, 20 minutes, we were deep into the gospel and talking with these Muslims about Christ. And as we talked with the other missionaries, and as I've traveled around Indonesia and talked with them about evangelism in Indonesia, that is not unusual. It's one of those great opportunities in the world today where there is an openness to us as Americans, contrary to what you would think, because they're Muslims and we're Americans, and but they are so welcoming. Some of the friendliest people on the planet are there in Indonesia. And almost every place, they say, you get welcomed into people's homes all the time. Now, we work in other places around the world where you spend 5 years trying to build a relationship with someone so they'll even say hi to you, much less invite you into their home. And it was so refreshing to be in a place where people were responding so quickly. And as we sat there and talked with these folk, we were able to very quickly, because of some of the things that they view in their religion as being common to ours, very quickly we could get into the gospel, and very quickly they understood some of the things that we were talking about. Now, they didn't come to Christ that evening, but typically the missionaries say you've got to go back about 2 or 3 times and they turn to Christ. One of the things that's happening right now in Indonesia is probably something that we've never seen in church history before. Missionaries of all organizations that I've talked to are speaking of tens of thousands of Muslims turning to Christ. It is one of those movements in church history that we just have not seen the likes of. Islam is the dominant country religion of Indonesia. This is the mosque in Jakarta, and it's hard to get a perspective from this picture. But 200,000 people can worship inside and in the courtyard around this building, and it's not filled like that every time they have prayer on Friday. But on their big days, they'll have almost 250,000 people. Imagine that, 250,000 people gathered in one spot. And so this is a very Muslim country. The majority of the people there are Muslim. But, you know, Muslims are people just like us. They're living life, trying to put it together, trying to be happy, trying to find food for their table. And many times we're intimidated by or put off by people because maybe a part of our history. But we need to realize that these are just people for whom Christ died. And Indonesia is one of those incredibly unique opportunities in the world today by way of evangelism. In fact, in all the places I've been in my life, I've never seen a place where evangelism is so easy that you can just sort of connect with people like that. You know, there are places that we're working, such as Europe, and you go to Denmark, and man, people don't want to talk at all. And talking about religion is a very personal matter that you just, but not in Indonesia. This is just part of their makeup, and they'll talk with you immediately. And it's just so fun to go someplace where you can immediately connect with someone and get into spiritual conversations. We are also working on a project in that country because there are people that are not Muslim. They are tribal people. There's 129 unreached people groups in that country, and so we've dubbed it the Malayo Project. We're trying to find people that will go and want to do sort of the traditional thing of rendering the Bible, rendering their language to writing, translating the Bible, doing the evangelism of the church planning, the whole bit. And we've dubbed that as the Malayo Project, and we're looking for people to go and do that. That, of course, is long-time work, and that's long drudge work, but it needs to be done. But this is just one of those unique situations in the world today, of all the places I've been and traveled in missions, that is just totally unusual, because this is one of those places that we can, I think, rightly say are fields that are white to harvest. You know where I'm going in the text, John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, we see Jesus giving his disciples a lesson in evangelism. You know the story of how he met with the woman at the well. We're not going to go through that. We're going to sort of jump over that, but you know that backdrop. But when you get to verse 31, remember they had gone into the city to get some food. They now came back. Verse 31 picks up on the story. In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, "Master, eat." They had just come back with lunch, and they're saying, "Jesus, here's the food. Come on, let's eat." And what does Jesus say? "I have meat to eat that you know not of." There's other priorities that I have. "Therefore," said his disciples one to another, "hath any man brought him aught to eat?" Jesus said unto them, "My meat," the thing that really excites me, the thing that drives me, "is to do the will of him that has sent me and to finish the work." What excites you more than eating? Jesus said, "There's something better than lunch." Would evangelism be more attractive to you than eating? Jesus was giving them a lesson here and said, you know what, there's some things that are far more exciting, far more important than just having lunch. And so the first part of his lesson to them was to give them a lesson on priorities. They were concerned about something to eat. He was saying, let me tell you about what is really important. On October 12, 1972, the Uruguayan rugby team was flying on a chartered plane across the Andes Mountains and crashed in the mountains. And they had gone off anybody's radar, and so they didn't know exactly where they had crashed. And there were 45 people on board. And for 10 weeks of searching, they could not find this plane. After 10 weeks, a couple of the people that had survived the crash had found their ways out of the mountains and found a Chilean peasant that told them where they were, and they went up and they rescued the people that were there. And out of the 40, 16 had survived. They were up in the snow, and of course there's nothing to eat up there, and the obvious question is, how did you survive for 10 weeks without food? And the gruesome story was that they ended up cannibalizing the bodies of those that had died. It's kind of a gross story, I realize that, especially right before lunch, but it gives you an illustration or a backdrop of this issue of priorities. We here would say if human flesh was on the buffet today for lunch, none of us would partake. But when things get bad enough, or when you really get down to it and you're either going to die or live, you sort of change your priorities. And that is really what this verse is basically talking about in Colossians chapter 3. If you are then risen with Christ, or actually it's since you are risen with Christ, is speaking to those of us who are believers, since you are risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. That word seek is an intense one of emotion. Zeteo, zeal, passion is what he's saying. The things that you ought to be passionate about are those things above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand. Set your affection, and that's to direct the mind. So he's talking both about the heart and the mind here. Set your mind or your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. And why do we do all of this? The baseline is this: you are dead. And these guys up there in the mountains realized that unless they ate, they were dead. And when you come to the realization that you are now dead, or you're a dead man, it starts to change some of your priorities. And so foundational to the Christian walk is this concept that we are crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet it's not me, but Christ living in me. It's the fact that I've embraced this idea of Romans chapter 6, that I have reckoned myself indeed dead. And when I get to the place where I've died to self, then my priorities change. And that's what Jesus, I think, is trying to get across to his disciples here. There's something more important than the mundane things of our life. And we're not going to really get involved in evangelism and missions unless we get to the place where we are willing to embrace this idea. And so Jesus starts off this section of the story by saying, look, I've got something more important than what you guys are thinking about. Let's move on to the next verse, verse 35. Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, look on the fields, for they are already white unto harvest. And many commentators would put it this way, that he was probably looking at the guys that were walking out of the town dressed in white robes, and maybe he's referring to them and saying, here comes the harvest, guys. They're ready for harvest. And however you see that, the point is, he was saying, there's some people coming now that are ready to hear and ready to turn to me and become followers of me. One of the challenges that we face in many places around the world is because there's so much resistance to the gospel and no one wants to talk about spiritual things, that we sort of delay giving the gospel. There are some places where you just jump in. In fact, I would recommend that you err on the side of being too early than too late. And I know there are places where we've got to develop a relationship and earn their ear to hear what we have to say, but we need to come to grips with the fact that the power is in the gospel, it's not in my relationship. And yes, there are people that we're going to say, they probably aren't interested at all, but my greatest surprises in life have been the people that I least suspected to become Christians, they're the ones that turn to Christ. We got to stop second-guessing who's going to be a good Christian or not. Just give the gospel. That's where the power is. And one of the lessons is that we need to just give the gospel. Don't keep saying, well, 4 months from now, maybe we'll see a harvest. Let's expect it today. But another application of this is simply the fact that there is such a thing as sowing fields and reaping fields. There are some places where we've got to do a lot of sowing. Those of you that are gardeners or farmers, you understand this principle. It takes a lot of work to till the soil, to put the fertilizer in, to put the seeds in, to water, to pull the weeds, to nurture those plants. And then way down the road, there's a reaping. And so there are two facets of this thing in missions. And as we take a look at different places around the world, there are places where they are reaping fields and there are places where it's sowing fields. And right now in Indonesia, it seems to be one of those places where there's an incredible reaping that is taking place. It is an exciting, fun place to be. There are other places where missionaries are working faithfully and they're not seeing it. Why? Because they're in the sowing phase. They're doing a lot of sowing and they're not seeing much results. And so we've got to acknowledge the fact that there's this basic possibility that at any moment, any person can come to Christ. Why? Because the power of God and the Word of God and the Spirit of God can do a work in their heart and life. And I need to stop saying, well, maybe 4 months from now we'll see something happen. And so with great optimism and faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ, we launch into evangelism and expect that God can do his work regardless of what a person is like. But it sure is fun to be in those places where it seems to be more of a reaping field. Then there's a principle. Excuse me, let me go back to this. There's a principle that Jesus lays out in verse 36. He that reapeth receiveth wages and gathereth fruit unto life eternal. Both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice. See the sowing and the reaping? There's sort of two kinds of fields and oftentimes two different kinds of ministries. There's some that are going to do a lot of sowing and not see the reaping. There are some that are going to reap, but they haven't necessarily sowed. I'm a lousy gardener. I can't grow a thing. But what I love to do is go around in the fall, late summer, when all the crops are coming in and going to someone else's garden and reap. That's a lot of fun. Let them do all the hard work. But somebody had to do the hard work before there's going to be the reaping. And Jesus says, your calling may be, or you may end up in a place where you see the reaping and someone else has been doing the sowing. I can only count on my one hand the number of times that the first time I gave the gospel to someone, they came to Christ. And then as I got to know them a little bit more, I found out that I'm just at the end of a long chain. Many other people have been inputting into that person's life before I showed up. I just happened to be there at that moment, so it's no credit to me. But a lot of people have done a lot of sowing and they didn't realize that this person was eventually going to come to Christ. I just had the joy of being there when it happened. And so we've got to We got to buy into this principle or understand this principle, especially when it comes to evangelism and missions, that there are reaping fields, there are sowing fields, there are those that sow, there are those that reap. Verse 37, herein is that saying true, one soweth, another reapeth. I send you to reap that whereon you bestowed no labor, and other men labored, and you are entered into their labors. There's a kind of a popular statement that is bounced around that goes something like this: find out what God is doing and get in on it. Now, I'm sure that people mean different things by that, and so I don't want to ascribe for people different meanings than maybe what they intend to say by it. But if it means you only go to the mission fields where there's reaping, only go to Indonesia, there's some problems with that. Because this principle says there's both reaping fields and sowing fields. There are some that are going to sow, there are going to some that are going to reap. And one of the difficulties with that statement, find out what God is doing and join him, is that God, or Jesus, told us to take the gospel to every person, every place, Mark 16:16. So we don't really have the option to second guess and say, well, because they're accepting Christ in Indonesia, we're going to go there and we're not going to go to Europe. We have the responsibility to take the gospel to every single person on planet Earth. The problem with that statement as well is it's kind of presumptuous to figure to know that you can figure out what God is doing. You know, God is doing stuff we just don't know. Our call is to faithfulness. And like your theme, our call is to please him. The results are up to him. I can't control the results, but I sure can control the input. We can control whether we go to every person on the planet. And the history of missions has been this tension between sowing and reaping. The history of missions has been people that have invested without seeing the results. And the next generation comes in and they see the results. William Carey, who's the father of, considered the father of modern missions, so in the last couple centuries he sort of gets that accolade, went to India as a missionary. And it was 7 years before he saw his first convert. It takes time to sow before the reaping takes place. Adoniram Judson was a Congregationalist when he got on the boat to head to India, got to studying the Bible and turned into a Baptist, and then went on, because he got sort of chased out of India, went to what was then Burma, today is Myanmar, and saw incredible results. History books say that it took him 12 years to see the first 18 converts. It was slow going. A lot of people would have looked at him and said, man, you need to just give up. You're not a very successful missionary. Your stats aren't all that great. Bob Brown is a missionary in Indonesia with our organization. He's been there for quite a few years. 30 years ago, he went into this little village, or tried to go into this village, and they wouldn't let him come. And of course, in that kind of a setting, you don't just go somewhere and live. You have to have permission from the village and from the chief and from everybody that's there to come and live with you, and they rejected him. About a year and a half ago, Bob was on the other side of the island where he is in Indonesia, and won a guy to Christ that was in prison. This guy was in prison because of murder. And many miles away from his village, but as he started discipling him, he found out that this was the chief from that village where 30 years ago he had been rejected. And 30 years later, the whole cycle comes back around where he leads now the chief to the Lord. The chief wrote, he's still in prison, he gets out in, I think about, well, a few months, maybe sometime this year, and he wrote a letter that Bob could deliver up to that village, introducing Bob and saying, welcome Bob into our village. And this chief now, as a believer, will probably end up back in his village. And it's that sowing, it's that faithfulness that we tend to count our success by what we see right in front of us. We have no idea what God is doing in the background. Our role is to please him, to be faithful in what God has called us to do. I come from Africa. I grew up in Africa and was a missionary in Africa. So David Livingstone looms large in our thinking. And everybody knows David Livingstone. You realize that he had one convert in his whole life in ministry that we know of? In fact, that one, he sort of rejected him because he thought he had backslidden. Now, he came back full circle, and it seems like he had great impact in southern Africa, this chief that he had led to the Lord. But David Livingstone traveled all over that continent without seeing results for his ministry. One of his projects was to find the headwaters of the Nile, which he did. He located that. And, of course, there was no believers there. And he died not knowing that there would be any believers there. A friend of mine a few years ago had a pastor's conference at the headwaters of the Nile for 25,000 pastors. David Livingstone could have never, I doubt he could have ever imagined that. You see, David Livingstone probably went to his death feeling like he was a failure. Yeah, he had opened up that part of Africa, had done some things to help with the slave problems, and maybe done some other things, but by way of being a missionary, we would consider him a failure today. But you see, the difference is God's keeping the score, and God's doing things that we cannot imagine. And there are fields where we need to be involved in sowing. There are fields that we need to be involved in reaping. Robert Morrison went to China. In 27 years, he saw 10 converts. Died wondering whether this was ever going to take off. And you know the stories and seen the stats. And I've just seen them all over the place. I have no idea which stats are correct. But we do know that there are millions of believers in China today. And somebody like Morrison went there and probably ended his life feeling somewhat as a failure. No one giving him the just due because he didn't have the scorecard. He was in a sowing field, not a reaping field. The Apostle Paul was sitting in prison at the end of his life. And I've oftentimes tried to imagine what that might have been like. You get to the end of the book of Acts, and it's not a very glamorous way to end a ministry. Basically under house arrest, limited to people coming to see you. And though Paul had seen churches planted, he had no... I can't imagine he would have ever imagined the millions of Christians that were to follow in the 2,000 years after him, and perhaps died in that prison cell or was beheaded, if history is correct, feeling that I really haven't accomplished that much with my life. My parents were with a mission organization in Nigeria. These were the men that helped to found that organization. They headed into Nigeria, and the man on the left very quickly died. The others had so much sickness. The guy on the right, Bingham, he couldn't go into the main. He had to stay back in Lagos and try to help provide supplies. And these men went into Nigeria with high hopes of reaching that part of the country, that part of Africa for Christ, but saw very little results in their lifetime. My parents were with that mission organization that these men would help to found. And now, all of these years later, I was talking to somebody the other day that is connected with that group of churches. It's called ECWA, Evangelical Churches of West Africa. Sort of the fellowship of churches that mission organization started. That group of churches now has 2,000 missionaries that they've sent out. These men, I doubt, could have ever imagined that. They didn't know any believers there, much less thousands of missionary-minded churches that would be sent. You see, there are reaping fields and there are sowing fields. And we have to take a step back and try to embrace the big picture of what God is doing, because we can't always understand what God is doing. And yes, we'd like to get in on the sowing part, but there are some people that are called to be... we'd like to get in on the reaping part, but there are some who are called to be the sowers. And some people are going to have to do the hard slogging of tilling the soil, of putting the seed in, of watering and fertilizing and weeding and nurturing those plants. And they'll never see the crop because they're going to be out of the way by the time the crops come in. Then others of us are going to be able to sweep in and enjoy reaping the harvest. This man here, William Leslie, was a missionary to the Congo. Back in 1912, he was a medical doctor, and he went into a very remote part of that country. And for 17 years, he ministered to the people with his doctoral skills, but saw very little results. And finally, threw in the towel, came back to the States, came back a defeated man, feeling as if he had failed in his mission. That was in the early 1900s. In 2010, there was a team of people that went into that same area, flew back in, traversed back through the jungles, went back to where Dr. Leslie had worked. And they found a network of churches, some 1,000 strong, that now were there and were worshiping. And Leslie never saw it, never heard of it. That's just the story of missions. There are reaping fields and there are sowing fields. There are places where we're going to see a lot happen, and there are places where we're not going to see things happen. And we need to be very careful about judging a missionary based on the kind of prayer letters they can write and the numbers that they can produce. Because ultimately, the principle that Jesus gave us way back here is there are reaping fields and there are sowing fields. And I don't know what God's calling is on your life. You may be called to go into one of those places where you're going to spend your whole life, maybe see a couple of people turn to Christ. Others of you may go to a place like Indonesia, and you're going to see thousands of people turn to Christ. It's not you, it's not us. But rather, we are called upon by God to be faithful in taking the gospel to every person on the planet, regardless of what we think they're going to do or how they're going to respond. And as you think about the ministry that God has for you in the future, embrace this principle that Jesus gave to us here in John chapter 4, that some of you are going to be in reaping fields, some of you are going to be in sowing fields. Ultimately, whichever one you're in, it's not about whether I can produce results, because I can't. I wish I could force people into heaven. I can't. It's all about me being faithful and coming back to the basic theme that you have for this year, that we are here to please God, and we're to please God whether anybody else thinks we're successful or not, whether I see any results or not, whether anybody turns to Christ or not. God may have in his calling for my life put me onto a sowing field, and I, like Leslie, will come back and not have anything to show for my work. But God is at work on planet Earth, and he will use us if we simply keep our focus vertical and pleasing him.